So it's kind of like the hokey pokey of fear here. It's like, you know, we put the fear in, we take the fear out, we put the fear back in. You know, it's...
That's what it's all about.
That's what it's all about.
It's like a fear sandwich.
A fear sandwich. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the Bible Geeks Weekly Podcast. This is episode 27. I'm Brian Sheely.
I'm Ryan Joy.
And thanks so much, everyone, for tuning in. On today's episode, we are talking about fear and how to conquer it. We're going to look at Jesus' powerful miracle in the book of John about walking on the water. But before we do, let's start off with our Jesus Said segment. And you've got a verse for me this week?
I do. It's in Luke 12, beginning in verse 4. Jesus said, "I tell you, my friends, do not fear those who kill the body and after that have nothing more that they can do. But I will warn you whom to fear. Fear him who, after he has killed, has authority to cast into hell. Yes, I tell you, fear him. Are not 5 sparrows sold for 2 pennies? And not one of them is forgotten before God. Why, even the hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear not, you are of more value than many sparrows." What do you think?
Jesus is really dealing with the physical versus the spiritual. He's trying to take their mindset out of earthly fears into what you should really be afraid of. It kind of reminds me of the miracle when Jesus healed the lame man, how he really meets that man in the temple and tells him the thing he really needs to know. Yeah, I healed you from your lameness, but what you really need to do is stop sinning. And here, Jesus is telling his disciples, don't be afraid of earthly situations, people who might be threatening you. Who you should really be afraid of is God. And that seems to be the implication here, because after he is killed, has the authority to cast into hell. I mean, who else has the authority to cast into hell?
Yeah.
So it's a shift of mindset. It's changing our focus. It is so easy just to get wrapped up in earthly fears, to get wrapped up in what things seem to be on the surface. But here Jesus is saying, that's not the most critical thing you need to think about. What you really need to think about is fearing the one who can actually throw you into hell for all eternity.
I think of this passage in Isaiah that I think Peter references in 1 Peter 3, where he says, "Have no fear of them," those people who would trouble you, "but in your hearts honor Christ the Lord as holy." And then he talks about being prepared to offer a defense. But in Isaiah, he says, "Have no fear of those people, but instead tremble at the Lord. Have fear of the Lord. And if you fear the Lord, then you can not worry about other people. You can honor him, and then you can have actually security in that fear of the Lord, because that fear is a basis for a relationship with him." And I think that's that second part of this Jesus Said passage is God values you. God thinks of you as more important than a sparrow, and he takes care of the sparrow. He's going to take care of you. So fear him, don't fear other people, and he is the one who's going to take care of you. It gives me that parental idea, you know, you fear your parent, even though they're the ones that are going to take care of you.
Sure.
You fear your parent, but you trust them, and the fear is not the primary basis of your relationship with them. Security is the primary basis, but whenever you interact with them, there's always that respect.
Seems like it's a different kind of fear, that like he's talking about two different kinds of fear here.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's telling us to fear God, which seems to be more of a respectful, honoring kind of fear. But we don't have a respectful, honoring kind of fear of, let's say, somebody who's threatening to kill you. That's not the same kind of fear that we have for those people. Mm-hmm. But I think it's also interesting here, too, in this verse that he says, "Do not fear," in verse 4. But then he says, "Fear him," in verse 5. And then he finishes it up by saying in verse 7, "Fear not.
Fear not."
Yeah. So it's kind of like the hokey pokey of fear here. It's like, you know, we put the fear in, we take the fear out, we put the fear back in. You know, it's...
That's what it's all about.
That's what it's all about. So
it's like a fear sandwich.
A fear sandwich.
Yeah.
Yes. And so on one hand, in order to not have fear, we have to fear, which...
Yeah. Yeah.
Is kind of paradoxical. It's kind of hard to wrap our minds around, but I think it's easier to walk away with a good understanding of it when you see that there are probably different kinds of fear here. God is going to care for us. He's going to take care of us. He values us. So that leads us to trust him.
Both fearing the Lord and trusting the Lord to take care of you providentially begin with recognizing who you are in light of who God is. Mm-hmm. It's about an ordering of the hierarchical structure of the universe. You know, mm-hmm. we put ourselves in this higher place. We put other people in higher places than they belong, and we fear them. We fear all these other things. And in the same way, we also neglect to trust the Lord and we neglect to fear the Lord whenever we don't see that he is reigning. We are down here, and I think that's what the fear of the Lord really is about, is seeing who God is and placing yourself under him, just seeing the reality of the situation, which is we are so far under him, we should fear him, we should reverence him. There's no reasonable thing but to recognize who he is and tremble. And once we do that, then we can also recognize there is nothing else to fear, and if I'm in good relationship with him, if I know who he is and I submit myself to him, then in that surrender, I can find peace because of who he is.
Well, that's a good way to kick this off in this discussion about fear.
Yeah.
So let's continue on in our next conversation in a segment that we call Here's Your Sign.
Here's Your Sign.
So we're looking at the miracles of Jesus, and here we are at the fifth miracle of Jesus. Let's just go over the miracle really quickly, and then we'll get into some comments about it. So it's in John chapter 6, beginning roughly around verse 16. Jesus is on a mountain by himself, and we know that he went there because at the end of his miracle of feeding the 5,000, remember, they wanted to make him king, and he doesn't want to be the king. Well, he wants to be the king, but he doesn't want to be that kind of king. And so he goes up to the mountain by himself. His disciples get into a boat and they go across the sea, and this huge storm kicks up, and he goes out and walks to them on the water, which is amazing.
Yeah.
No small thing here, Jesus walking on the water. In Matthew's account of this miracle in Matthew 14, it says that it was the fourth watch, which is like 3 in the morning. And so pretty dark out, he walks out to them. And as he's walking, they become afraid because they see this figure walking to them in the distance. When was the last time you saw anybody walking on the water? Never. So who is this? And again, in Matthew's account, it actually says that the disciples said, it's a ghost. They weren't sure who he was. They were terrified by this. And Jesus comes up and really says probably the most profound yet simple thing. It is I. Do not be afraid. Mm-hmm. And so they stop being afraid, and good for them. And he gets into the boat, and it says in John's account that immediately they were on the other side of the sea. I don't know if that's another miracle. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
Some people have questioned whether or not this was a miraculous teleportation, you know, across the sea. So that's kind of where John's account of this miracle ends. But when you go into the other Gospels, particularly in Matthew, you see an interaction between Jesus and Peter before he gets into the boat that I think is noteworthy to bring up here. It says in Matthew chapter 14, verse 28, Lord, if it is you, command me to come out to you on the water. This is what Peter says. And he said, come. So Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came to Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, Lord, save me. Jesus immediately reached out his hand and took hold of him, saying to him, O you of little faith, why did you doubt? And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshiped him, saying, truly you are the Son of God.
I mean, first of all, you just kind of have to sit back for a minute and think about walking on water.
Oh, yeah.
It's iconic. We say that about people, you know, oh, he thinks he can walk on water, mm-hmm. you know, meaning he thinks he is the Messiah. He thinks he's perfect. You know, he thinks he's that important, because it's so obvious that if someone can walk across a sea, clearly they are divine.
Yeah.
Clearly there's something extraordinary about them. So what an iconic and just extraordinary moment. But I think about being in the boat before Jesus gets there, mm-hmm. and then seeing that figure. Like you said, when do you see people walking on the water? That's just crazy. And then if you think about being at 3 in the morning in a stormy sea on, you know, just in this little dinghy, and there's something about a dark sea at night. It was a dark and stormy night.
That's nightmare fuel right there.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there's been times where I've been in a dark place in the middle of the night, 3 a.m, you know, you can put yourself in that place where you're jumping at shadows and small sounds and wondering what's going on. And the disciples don't seem like the kind of people to go for ghost stories, but here, that's exactly what they think first, and that is the word they use. We use this word. It's the word phantasma. Mm. It's a ghost, they said, Matthew 14:26. And you can just imagine that panic in yourself.
Right.
And you can imagine that panic at any moment that we might have. Lots of things that bring us fear, whether it's our kids being in danger, you're about to do a presentation for a bunch of people, you're about to, you know, if you're not used to speaking in public, you're afraid that, you know, sometimes just the fear of
rejection.
The fear of rejection is really powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah. The fear of failure, the fear of death, you know, even as Christians, a lot of times you're still working through those thoughts about the unknown. And so whatever you're fearing, you can put yourself in that moment with them and then see Jesus coming closer. And it almost seems like in John's account, Jesus coming close is the source of some of their panic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're frightened by him coming close. And sometimes when God comes near, people do become afraid when they have those theophanies, those appearances of God, whether it's Moses at the burning bush or, you know, John later on in his life seeing Jesus in a vision in Revelation 1. He's panicked. He falls down like a dead man. And Jesus says something just like here. Look, I am the first and the last. I am who I am. Take heart. Don't fear. Don't be afraid. And so he says in Matthew's account, three things. Take heart, which means find courage, be cheerful, be okay, trust me. It is I, literally, I am. Young's literal translation says, I am he, but he is italicized. That word isn't there. It's literally, I am. I'm here. It's me.
We've heard that word before.
Yeah, so there's something really powerful going on maybe there. And then he says, don't be afraid, take courage. And later on in the book of John, in John 8:58-59, Jesus is going to say those words that here are translated, it is I, and people are going to try to stone him thinking it's blasphemous. Mm-hmm. When he says, I, before Abraham was, I am,
right.
Ego eimi. This phrase that he uses here, it could be just a regular phrase, and surely the disciples didn't think a lot of it, except that he's identifying himself as the one that they know. When you read it in the bigger context of the book of John and those seven I am statements, and this statement in John 8 where he says, I am, which is the name of God and that God gives in Exodus 3:14, I look at it and I think, maybe we're meant to take more from this than just him saying, hey, it's just me. Especially that maybe John, whenever he remembers this and places that there, he leaves off one of the things Jesus says, the take heart, and it kind of even emphasizes more this thing that Jesus says, I am.
In Matthew's account, they say at the end of this whole encounter, truly, you are the Son of God.
Yeah.
Now, him walking on the water and even seeing Peter walk on the water would have given that away. But I think even just from his words here, they probably are seeing that too.
Absolutely. And he is doing what, of course, only Yahweh does. And the Old Testament talks a lot about Yahweh doing these very things figuratively that Jesus did literally as he walks through the water. Job 9:8 and Psalm 77:8 and Isaiah 43:16 talk about God walking on the sea.
Mm-hmm.
God extends his hand to save people from great waters in Psalm 10:12. And God calms the storm in Psalm 107:29-30. So there's all this imagery, especially in the Psalms, of God doing the very things that Jesus does. So when he says, I am, it is this powerful statement, not only I am the one you know, I'm Jesus, your friend and master, but in light of all of these other things, you start to see he is the great I am.
He is walking on the water to go be with them. And yeah. That, I think, is even more amazing here, because he could have just shown them, look, I can walk on the water, and that they would have been amazed by that. But he gets out onto the water to go be with them. And that love, that care, that relationship that he has is really powerful for us, I think, because when we're in the middle of our own storms, when we're going through stuff ourselves, we don't have to question whether or not Jesus is going to come to us. We don't have to worry whether or not Jesus is able to weather that storm too, because he did it here.
What can separate you from the love of God?
Yeah.
He'll cross any sea.
Exactly. You mentioned Isaiah 43. And in Isaiah 43, verse 2, it says, "When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. When you walk through fire, you shall not be burned, and the flame shall not consume you." Just kind of this picture again of how God is able to weather those storms. And not only weather those storms, but he's able to stand with us and strengthen us through those times.
That passage you just read is so insightful. It really helps me understand what God's promise is and what God's promise isn't. I did a lesson called Through the Fire this year. Mm-hmm. And I just was struck by the way this passage tells us, not, "I'm going to take you around the fire, don't worry about it," or, "You won't have to go through the water." You know,
right.
"I'm not going to make you go through fire. I'm going to deliver you from fire." That's not his promise. His promise is, when you pass through the waters, because it's going to happen, when you go through the rivers and through the fire, I will be with you. And it will not consume you. You won't be drowned. You won't be burned. You're going to make it through because I'm with you.
The disciples here are still in the middle of the storm. They're still in the middle of trial. He could have just said, "Hey guys, don't go across the sea right now because there's going to be a storm." He let them go, knowing what would happen. And while they're in the middle of it, while they feel like there's no hope, while they might have very well felt like this is the end, there's no chance that we're going to get out of this, Jesus comes out to them and says, "I've got this. I've got you. I'm still going to have to go through difficult situations. I'm not going to be sheltered or cocooned. I'm not sort of in this protective bubble from trouble. But when I am in the middle of it, that's when Jesus can come in and really save me from that."
Yeah, we talked last week about the test and that it's in the living that we strengthen our faith, prove our faith, that faith becomes faith. You know, it's in the midst of the trial that we live faith. We can't do it outside of that. There is no faith if everything is sight. There is no courage. There is no love. There is no need for any of the virtues that God has held up for us until we're in the fire, and then we find a way to be compassionate to someone else in pain and in difficulty. We find a way to trust God in the midst of the difficulty. You know, we find that courage. And so he lets us go through the fire, but he leads us through the fire. And yeah, it's such a great passage.
Trial is not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes we view trial as this negative thing, but really it can refine us. It can purify us. It can clarify what it is that we really value, what it is that we really are about. And I think he is testing them in a way.
Yeah.
And are they going to trust him? Are they going to listen to him? Are they going to feel like he's caring for them and like he's able to take them out of this situation?
Imagine a movie where nothing happens. Imagine a movie where there's no conflict, nothing bad comes at the hero.
I think I've watched some Hallmark movies like that, by the way.
Yeah, okay, that's a good point. But something is keeping those two beautiful people apart, mm-hmm, in that small and gorgeous little town, even in the Hallmark movie. It's the trial is the Reds got put in with the Whites. Oh no.
And now our
something bad has happened. Yeah. But this is the story. You know nothing about a character until something goes wrong.
Right.
Contact has been made with the enemy and difficulty is here. Now what are you going to do? Now you can grow. Now you can become. Now you can live your virtue. And that is our life. There is nothing to be known about us. We can't become what we could be until contact with the enemy is made. Trial has purpose. It's not bad. It's where the story of our lives happen. We are our response to these difficulties. And until these difficulties come, we don't know what we are.
All the good things that can come from trial, patience, building up our faith, yeah. deeper relationships with others. I mean, all these things that in hindsight we can see, but in the moment, it just doesn't seem good at all. And I'm reminded of Paul's words in Philippians chapter 1, where he's in jail for his faith. He has been thrown into prison. And basically he says, look, this is not a bad thing. This is not the end of my work. I still have things I can do. I still have opportunities to influence others. And just because I'm in this terrible situation doesn't mean everybody needs to throw up their hands and say, it's all over. For many of us, when we're faced with times of fear, when we're afraid of something, whatever it is, financial loss, dealing with a broken relationship, dealing with confrontations from the world, all kinds of things that we might be afraid of or uncertain about, how do we deal with that? What do we do?
One insight that I grab onto from this story between Peter and Jesus that is helpful to me is whenever Peter says, if you are Jesus, if you really are, command me to get out of the boat. Why does he say, command me?
Yeah. He's testing Jesus almost.
Yeah, he's testing Jesus. I love that he's commanding Jesus to command him. Mm-hmm. But why is that even so important that Jesus command him? You know, he's right there. He's standing. You can see his face. But he wants a command from Jesus.
Sure.
Because if Jesus tells you to do it, then surely you're going to be okay when you do it. If Jesus says, do this, then I can do it with confidence and find a way to know I'm secure in my obedience. It's whenever you get out of the boat and Jesus isn't there, man, you're on your own. That's going to be a bad end.
Yeah.
And so that says to me, am I stepping into the Lord's commands? Am I looking for what is his will for me? And once I check my life and figure out in this situation where I'm afraid or where there's difficulty, what does the Lord want? And if I just kind of simplify things down to the basics, like the song we sing, Trust and Obey, if I just do the thing that I know I should do, and if it's scary, it's scary. Getting out of the boat and stepping onto a stormy water is scary, but if it's in his command, then I can steel myself, not in my own strength, but knowing I'm just obeying Jesus, he's not going to abandon me in my obedience.
Peter just constantly surprises me with his responses to situations. I mean, I would never in a million years have thought to ask Jesus to let me go out too. I never would have thought that.
Yeah, me either.
But Peter is, he's all about it. He's, oh, I want to get in on that. I want to be out there with you, Jesus. Tell me to come out.
You can't make this stuff up.
No, you can't. And it really does highlight how much Peter trusts Jesus. He trusts that, well, if Jesus says I can walk on the water, then I can. Mm-hmm. I do also love the fact that Peter is not presented as this perfect, faithful person either, because in that story, he also has difficulty. And I think that's another thing we get from that. Sometimes in the middle of trusting his commandments and doing what he wants, we get sidetracked by more fear. You know, he was already afraid when he saw Jesus. He has confidence now that he recognizes him. He tells him to come out. He gets out onto the water, and then he has fear again. And so that's also super relatable for me, because in one moment I can be trusting the Lord. In one moment I can be unafraid. And then I just get distracted and I see the wind. I glance away and I start to sink.
Can you imagine being a Christian as the Gospel of Mark starts circulating and meeting Peter? You know, you're
you're that guy.
It's like the first reality star of the Christian movement. It's, oh, you're Peter. I know you.
I know about you.
Man, you had some good moments, but you blew it a few times. It's just funny.
It serves as an example, even in his failure. I think there is something to be said about being honest and opening up about how we've messed up, you know,
because
we learn from Peter's failure here, and people can learn from our failures too. Oh, I fail all the time. You know, there's constantly stuff that I am doing that kind of seems similar to what Peter does here. I get afraid, I get distracted, and I begin to slip and I begin to sink. And people were able to learn a lesson from that in Peter's life, just like we are today. And people can learn a lesson for that from our lives too.
Yeah.
You know, what am I afraid of? What is it that keeps me paralyzed? What is it that I am uncertain about, or that causes me to freeze up or lock up? And in thinking about the things that I deal with, there are times where in those fearful moments, it is really helpful to go back to maybe a touchstone verse or something in the Bible that can help us get out of that situation. And there are so many of those verses. There's so many verses throughout the Bible where you look at that and you say, well, if they weren't afraid, I shouldn't be either. And I think one of them for me is John chapter 14, verse 27, where Jesus says, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. Not as the world gives, do I give to you. Let not your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid." Jesus is the source of peace. He's not the source of peace the way the world would give it, but he's the source of peace that lasts and that can't be shaken. And so we shouldn't be afraid, like we talked about in our Jesus Said segment, about what people can do to us and these situations of life. We really just need to trust the Lord.
Yeah. I'm giving you a different kind of peace, a peace that's going to surpass understanding, as Paul says, "Let not your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid." Yeah, there's a lot of power in just having one of those power verses, one of those stabilizing verses that just comes to mind whenever you're struck in a moment of difficulty, when you're jumping and looking for phantasmas and thinking something is around the corner. I don't know what it is. The other shoe's going to drop. Everything is going to fall apart. We have to find a way to hear Jesus' voice say, "It is I. Don't be afraid."
Yeah. And I think for me, sometimes a lot of the fears might come down to financial situations. Maybe that's relatable for anyone else. You know, am I going to have enough money to make it through this month? Am I going to be provided for in the way that would be beneficial for my family? And another verse that really helps take care of those situations is Hebrews chapter 13, verse 5, where the writer says, "Keep your life free from love of money and be content with what you have, for he has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you." So we can confidently say, "The Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do to me?" Don't love money. Don't love possessions. Don't love this earth. Don't love this life, because God's never going to leave us. He's never going to forsake us. And that brings us confidence to know that he's helping us. There's no reason to be afraid when he's by our side. There's no reason to be afraid when Jesus is in the middle of the storm and has the power to say, "Peace, be still."
And maybe that'd be a good challenge for us to each find a verse, a powerful verse, to help us overcome fearful situations and memorize it.
All right, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning into the Bible Geeks podcast. You can find us on our website at BibleGeeks.fm. You can also follow along with us on social media. We are /TheBibleGeeks wherever you might find us. And don't forget, we are currently posting every weekday the Bible Geeks Daily Download. So if you want to go check that out, go ahead and find that at BibleGeeks.fm/daily. And until next week, everyone, may the Lord bless you and keep you.
Shalom.